Have you registered for the Recruitment Coach Live Summit yet? Here's reason number three why this will be the best investment you make in your business in 2025. You'll discover the latest trends. Listen, the recruitment industry is literally changing before our very eyes. What worked 2 years ago or even last year could already be outdated information. If you want to stay current in terms of the technology, the adoption of AI and automation, and the tactics and strategies that are actually working right now in today's marketplace, then you need to get yourself to London on September 17th or 18th. Do not get left behind. Register now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to The Resilient Recruiter. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and my very special guest today is Paul Hallam. Paul is the founder and director of Six Degrees Executive, one of Australia's leading executive recruitment and search firms. Established in 2004, SDE has 85 people with offices in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, and annual revenues exceeding $25 million. They pride themselves on their values-led, non-transactional, relationship-based approach. Today, we're going to talk about scaling your recruitment business, leadership, succession planning, and diversity inclusion. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Mark, and thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
I will also say that bio that you read out of mine was pre-COVID, so some of those people numbers and revenue numbers might have changed a little bit.
Yeah, I think that goes for everybody around the world in our industry. Since you brought it up, let's start there. What impact has this crisis had for you guys, and how are you dealing with it?
That's a good question. It was when it did hit, and we were one of the first, not just recruitment companies, but companies to send people home. Luckily, we had the technology to support it, and Susie McInerney, our CEO, put the health and wellness of our people over everything else, and we wanted to get everyone home. It hit pretty hard, there are a lot of scared people, scared because of the health risks, but also scared because of the business risks. Fast forward three, four months, Australia is in an incredibly good position. We've only had 102 people die in Australia, and only 7,500 reported cases. It was a massive scare, but luckily, by the way the government, both state and federal, has reacted, we are in a very, very good position from a health perspective. From an economic perspective, let's wait and see. Our unemployment rate has gone to 8.5%. Luckily enough, our government is supporting us with a JobKeeper allowance. So about 3.5 million people are on government subsidies and assistance. The economic impact is definitely there. I do personally believe it's going to get tougher before it gets better.
Absolutely. I think what you're saying echoes what everyone else will also be feeling. In fact, I've got a couple of clients I've known for years in Australia, and of course they were calling me, Mark, what should we do? What advice, would you give to other business leaders, particularly in our sector in recruitment, in order to sort of weather the storm and come out of this, in a good place, so that they can take advantage of the upswing when it comes.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. And having gone through this before with the GFC, we were a much smaller business then. We were 25, 30 people through the GFC, and we didn't let anyone go. We retrained our people. Our people were very job rich prior to GFC, and we had to retrain them as far as business development and look at better and different ways of doing things. And the GFC didn't last long, and we came out of that and made more money than we'd ever made before. It has been a little bit different for us this time round, in that we have a lot more people. Sadly, we had to let some people go. We had to look at our business, and we all went to point eight or 4 days a week, because as we know in recruitment, the biggest cost that we bear is our employment costs. So we needed to get those down. Luckily, we were helped by the government initiatives as far as JobKeeper, and that made life a little bit easier for us, and in order to plan. The same principles applied. We actually have started retraining the staff. But the most important thing is, looking after the health and wellness of your people. It is a pretty, a very, very unique situation in that not only are you weathering this storm, but a lot of people are weathering this storm alone or at home and having to do things like homeschool. So, the thing that we have really focused on more than anything else is the health and wellness of our people and making sure that everyone's okay. And then obviously the business, we've still got to run a business at the same time. And one of the early decisions we made was making people going to 4 days a week, knowing that there wasn't going to be as much job flow. So you weren't sort of banging your head against the wall 5 days a week, you were doing it 4 days a week.
Okay, I hear you. By the way, for our listeners outside Australia, GFC stands for Global Financial Crisis. I've only ever heard Australians use that particular phrase, so I thought we should explain it. So talking about health and wellness, could you elaborate on specifically how you've addressed that at Six Degrees?
Absolutely. I mean, health and wellness has always been very important to us. We take the unique part about Six Degrees is our culture. And I know a lot of firms say that, but that is really reflective in our turnover. We're an industry that has upwards of 40 to 50% turnover per annum consistently through our Six Degrees journey in 16 years. Our turnover has never been more than 15%.
Wow.
That is because we take a holistic approach. Well, sorry. Firstly, we hire correctly. Yes. So, we've got a very, very rigorous process where we hire. We take a holistic approach to people when they join our business, and we've maintained what we call a family culture, and that was very much the same when we were 10 to 30 to 80 people. And the health and wellness is not just an ergonomic workstation, but strong mental health, making sure that people, recruitment can be quite a financially beneficial industry to work in, making sure that people are being smart with their money when they make money. So our approach in looking after people has and always will be a holistic approach.
Awesome. That sounds interesting, Paul. Could you give a couple of examples of like what that really means on a practical basis to look after people holistically?
Absolutely. I think you and I had a pre-discussion around this, and the hardest and toughest day of my life in Six Degrees history was when I had to come in and tell people that one of their team members, Luke Riley, had taken his own life. We had always been conscious of people's mental health, but when something like that happens, mental health is probably the most important area that we look at when looking after people. I mean, there are the logical things as far as training and development and building leadership capability and all those things that people expect of an organisation from a professional perspective. But when we're talking about a personal perspective, such as mental health, we all talk about the highs and lows of recruitment and the often A-type personalities the recruiters are. The mental health and well-being of our people is the most paramount thing. So, we talk about an ability to say, there's a great initiative in Australia called Are You Okay Day. And that's a day where you check in with people to make sure that they are okay from a mental health perspective. And that's not just asking, are you okay, but asking the second and third questions and also educating people to make sure that they see the signs that when people aren't okay. So, you know, when at 6 Degrees we talk about Are You Okay Day is not just one day a year, which is the drive, the national drive, but Are You Okay Day is every day. And you know, it's making sure that people are not worked to the bone, not partying too hard, but have a really good balance in life, and that means a good family life, and enforcing vacations if people haven't taken vacations for 6 months, knowing the stresses of recruitment, and making sure that we take a holistic approach to managing and looking after people, not just a professional one.
Wow. So it sounds like this terrible event was perhaps a catalyst for you guys really focusing on people's mental health and even more than perhaps you were before. What specifically shifted? So I know there's not, of course, awareness is part of it, and Are You Okay Day being not, you know, one day a year, but being an ongoing discussion. What other shifts did you guys make to really address this? Because recruiting is, although it can be very lucrative, it can be very fulfilling, it can also be very high pressure, high stress. So what changes did you guys make at 6 Degrees, you know, in light of that?
Well, I think the first two things is that we developed a mental health policy. And then also we signed up to an EAP or an employee assistance program. So 6 Degrees has an outsourced psychological counsellor in each of our states that if people aren't coping for whatever reason, that they have a hotline that they can call up and that we will pay for counselling for them.
Oh, that's awesome. So
that's what we did internally, as well as training our leaders to look at the signs that people are not okay. And so that's what we did internally. But, you know, with Luke's passing, we felt that we had a much broader responsibility, and we got involved with an organisation called Beyond Blue. And Beyond Blue is probably the largest organisation in Australia around mental health and depression and anxiety awareness. And our job was to then help Beyond Blue change organisations' approach to mental health and ensure that they had a mental health policy and also make it okay to be talking about mental health within the workplace. Because, it wasn't long ago that no one ever talked about depression and anxiety, and this was something that was swept under the carpet, or you were seen you were weak for having depression or anxiety. But now, thank God, a lot has changed in that area.
It's absolutely. You know, my dad actually is a psychiatrist, and I know that although it is getting better, there still seems to be a stigma associated with, you know, being on leave with stress or anxiety, depression, that sort of thing. What I'm really impressed, Paul, that you guys have instituted this, because a lot of big organizations will provide access to counseling, but I've not come across any other recruiting firms, especially small, medium-sized businesses. I know you're a large SMB, but you'd still fall, I think, within the small, medium enterprise category. I've not come across any others that have provided that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and just really one interesting area there, Mark, is we have noticed since COVID-19 started, a big uptake on our EAP policy, because people are really struggling at the moment. Yeah. And, you know, obviously there's anxiety around financial stress, anxiety around loneliness, and yeah, especially people that are stuck at home with no, you know, sometimes I scream at my children, but I'm delighted to be spending some quality time with them. But there are people here that have no one, and yes, it's pretty lonely for them. And, you know, they get a lot of their social interaction and their connectedness at work. And I think we need to be aware of people's mental health during these times.
Absolutely. Wow, that is really, really cool that you guys are doing that. Tell me, so in terms of growing a successful organization, and you guys have gone from, you know, startup in 2004, you know, through, I guess there's a couple of phases of this growth. One is like going from zero to sort of 25, 30 employees is a kind of major milestone where you start having critical mass, but usually the owners and founders are still kind of like the top billers in the business. And, you know, there's a lot, they have a disproportionate responsibility in the organization structure and so on. And then you get to the sort of, once you get sort of past that sticking point and scale up to the level that you guys have, sort of, you know, 70, 80 or more people, then that's another sort of major milestone. But look, most recruitment companies are small. They never get even to the 25. They're sort of like a handful, maybe 3, 4, 5, 10 people. What do you think are the key success factors that enabled you to scale the business?
Absolutely. And I'd say there are two points for us. It was easy for us to get to 10, and then we had a trouble getting from 10, and then we got to 30. And then at 30, we then looked for some outside help to talk about how we scale our business. And we got a non-executive director or chairman who really helped us really look at our business and make sure that we were on track. And I'm reluctant to use the word corporatize because we're not a corporatized business as such, but it's making sure that we are, you know, one of the big decisions that was made was to put me in as CEO and make sure that, you know, as you said, there were three original founders who are still with the business today, including myself. But, you know, there were three people that had different ideas and, you know, people would go to different founders when they wanted different resolutions. And our chairman said, okay, it needs one leader. And I was appointed CEO. And then, you know, it was made sure that we had a very clear strategy and plan on where we were going and trying not to deviate from that. Now, of course, there are always roadblocks and things that come up, but, you know, very, very clear on who we are and what we wanted to be and being very, very laser focused in delivering that. The other important part for us was maintaining our people, maintaining our culture and our number one focus on people. And, you know, a lot of people talk about culture eating strategy for breakfast. We did have a clear plan, but we maintained a great culture.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that
the one other important thing that people forget about, and that is making sure that you have strong cash flow. Because that is something that people forget about. You know, one of the, you know, we were historically very good at making money, the best thing that helped us really get to that level was bringing in a CFO we made decisions, and a lot of our decisions were gut decisions, and if it felt right, we did it. But when we really wanted to scale, we brought in a CFO that implemented a very, very strict budgeting process, and that's not just revenue, but that's costs and every single cost that we did. And it actually was a business plan in numbers. And I think recruiters historically are great. Let's get on the phone. Let's sell. Let's make placements. But that financial planning and rigorous financial planning and cash flow management was really, really important in scaling and growing the business.
It's really interesting. I interviewed a couple of other entrepreneurs based here in the UK, and who were founders of a really successful business over here called Liquid Personnel. They grew that to about 130 staff, and they sold it for 20 or 25 million pounds. And so that's John and Alex. I'll put a link, by the way, guys, in the show notes. So if you haven't heard that interview yet, you can click on that. They actually said their biggest mistake or their biggest their biggest learning in that process was cash flow. You know, they came from a very sales oriented background. They were really strong on that. They grew into great leaders, but they were not on top of their cash management, and they almost went out of business as a result. Even though on in terms of the revenue, it looked like the business was performing really well. What stage?
Especially, Mark, especially if you've got a big contractor book, it becomes exactly. more essential. We're probably too heavily weighted to permanent recruitments, and as Greg Savage has always counseled me on, but in executive recruitment, it is a lot harder to build a big contracting book, but cash flow is so important if you've got a big contracting book.
Exactly. Well, that was exactly the case with these chaps. Their business was primarily contract. And so on paper, they had these huge, you know, revenue figures, right? But the reality was they were in a precarious position until they sorted that out. What stage did you bring in a CFO and just like sort of professionalize the way you were controlling the finances?
As far as people numbers, it was probably about 40 people.
Okay. So yep. I just want to understand, you said it was relatively easy to get from 1 to 10. So like how long did it take you to get to that first milestone?
1 to 10. The hardest was the first one. I think we got to 10 within, you know, 12, 18 months.
Okay.
And then 10 to 30, and I'm guessing here, Mark,
sure. but
educated guess. I think 10 to 30 was probably 6 years.
Yeah.
Fast-tracked it, 6 years. So probably about a year eight, and then fast-tracked it from there.
Okay, fantastic. So often I see that getting from that 10 to 30 mark is one of the sticking points because there's a lack of process systems. It's still very much an entrepreneur-led sort of business where a lot, like the rainmakers, the people with the most connections, the people who are really driving revenue are still kind of the original founders and leaders. And then sort of starting to shift and build that, you know, develop the people in the business so that they are strong billers and also can become leaders as well. How did you navigate through that kind of milestone?
Yeah. And the one other thing I would add to you there, and maybe a summation of what you said, is lack of career development. When you've got 30 people, people are sort of saying, you know, billing is one thing, but where's my career going here? I just don't want to be sitting at a desk making money. So navigating that, and it wasn't easy. You know, it was pretty hard to let go. The three founders were still very heavily involved in the business when we were 25, 30 people. Held a lot of the relationships, I'll give you some a really good insight. You know, we also promised some people equity, one of the tough days here was when we had two people that came in and set up in competition to us, which is what we did when we left Michael Page, and that really hurt because one of them is still my good friend, when he resigned to set up on his own, I sort of said to him, Matt, what happened? And he said, well, you promised us equity and you didn't deliver on it, and he was right. We didn't. And that was a pivotal point in Six Degrees as well, because that actually forced us to develop an employee equity plan where we now have probably 10 people within our business on top of the original founders that have equity, that have equity within Six Degrees.
Oh, that's cool.
And so they now feel as though, they are owners of the business and are part of the business.
Yes.
And part of the ownership group. And so sometimes, you know, when things are presented that are really bad, they actually turn into really good opportunities. And that was one of those. But, further to what you said was that, you know, once we were 30 and once there was a CFO and once there was a CEO, we were able to put in strong systems and processes for career development, for recruitment operations, for marketing and digital, start being serious and budgeting process and start taking a mature approach to the way we were running our business, which enabled huge growth very, very quickly.
Awesome. You know, a few of these points sort of intersect around the, I mean, we're in a people business, right? And they intersect around hiring right people, but also retaining them. And it sounds like you figured out a few key things here. One is career development and being able to offer genuine, you know, a career path for people. The second was you mentioned the opportunity to, you know, get equity. What else do you think has contributed to the low staff turnover that you guys have? Because it's very hard to grow a business if for every, you know, three people you add, two are leaving, or maybe three are leaving, and you know you're constantly, you know, churning staff. Then you know you're treading water. You're never really going to take off. And you guys have somehow figured that puzzle out. What's the secret?
You know, one of the biggest ones, I think, Mark, is listening to our people and understanding. You know, sometimes we think we know what they want, but you know, when you ask them, it's a different thing. And so it's making sure that we listen to our people and respond accordingly. You know, you touched on earlier diversity inclusion. One of the things we're very proud of is that, you know, in our business, we are a diverse organisation. And, you know, historically, recruitment companies hire just like-minded people. We have great diversity. We have an over-representation as far as percentage-wise of females and females in leadership positions as well. And so we also have very progressive policies when it comes to maternity leave. You know, we implemented paid maternity leave when we were 20 people, and not many organisations when they're 20, only 20 people have paid maternity leave. That paid maternity leave has got bigger and better over time. You know, we also have very flexible work arrangements, excuse me, and flexibility to not just mothers, but, you know, I'm sorry, I said maternity, it's paternity. So the fathers or mothers are returning to work. We also have a father and mother of the same child in this office, and they have flexible working arrangements to make it work for them.
Wow, that's
so
awesome.
It's those type of things, and listening to your people and understanding what they want, as far as learning and development, flexibility, working arrangements, how they build the culture. You know, it's one of the things that we implemented maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We had the ELT, or our executive leadership team, which were you know, people that were at a certain stage in their career, generally been in recruitment for 10 years, all making decisions on people. And, you know, some of those people were probably 15 years younger than them. And then we made a decision to actually start getting a fair representation of the organisation in the executive leadership team meetings. So people in our graduate programs would come to our ELTs, and as long as they could contribute and had a voice, they were welcome. And so, you know, not just talking about diversity and inclusion, but really living it, and that makes the organisation much better.
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. There is a great book which I read recently, and I cannot think of the title, but I'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes and I'll let you know, Paul, by email, which is about diverse organizations and the science behind it. So it's not just a sort of feel-good policy, but actually results in greater innovation. Because if you have people in a company who all think the same way, then you have major blind spots without even being aware of it. And so the fact you're bringing younger people into the leadership meetings, you know, kind of somewhat mitigates that risk, because, you know, they will represent a portion of your candidate and client populations as well. And we need to understand that, you know, the way, you know, that part of our client base thinks, rather than assume that they think the same way that we do. So that's interesting.
There's also one really good tool that we use. You know, about 4 or 5 years ago, we wanted to do an engagement survey, and there were plenty of organisations that were doing it. We got a list of quotes, and they ranged from $20,000 to $40,000 to do it.
Wow.
And then someone said to us, "Haven't you heard of this HR tech called Culture App?" And Culture
what
is
it?
Culture App, AMP.
AMP. Okay.
Yeah, and Culture Amp is one of the best things that we've implemented in our business, because not only can you do engagement surveys, you can do pulse surveys, you do surveys on new starter training, you do surveys on, we've just done a recent COVID-19 surveys, and it gives you incredible data, real data for your organization. And it is it's a SaaS product, but it is not expensive. It's not, you know, anywhere near $20,000, but you know, I think we pay it's per user, but you know, it may be $5,000 a year, but that's for 85 people,
right?
And it gives us incredible data and insights on our people that we've never had before.
Wow, that's a great suggestion. Thanks for sharing that tool. I was going to ask you, you mentioned that listening to our people was one of the keys. And so I presume, and I was going to say, well, how do you do that? So the survey tool sounds like it's a great way of understanding, you know, what people are thinking, feeling, and soliciting that feedback. Was there anything else that you've done in order to promote listening to your people and being able to retain them?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, Greg Savage and I have discussed. You know, I believe that the recruitment industry doesn't create great leaders. It creates great managers that know how to manage KPIs and, manage people on activity. But leadership to me, and we've invested a lot of time and money, and I'm happy to send you some white papers that we've done on leadership more broadly. But leadership to me is about being a great listener and acting upon that. So, we spend a lot of time and effort and money in developing great leaders at Six Degrees, and great leaders are great listeners. And so that's a really important part of our ongoing development of Six Degrees leaders is making sure they're engaged listeners and they do something with that information. Because so often people listen is just the waiting as an opportunity for waiting to let them talk. And we really want to encourage our leaders to listen because that's where we get the best insights.
Absolutely. And I've heard Greg say that the true sign of a good leader is how many other leaders they've created. How do you know Greg, by the way? Because he was the one who introduced us.
Well, Greg, I know through the recruitment industry. I take the opportunity to go to every single one of Greg's recruitment presentations and have been going since I set this business up. Greg is one of probably the only international spokesperson on the recruitment industry I'm not saying Greg's that old, but he's older than I am. I think he celebrated his 60th birthday a year or two ago, and yep. Still has more passion for this industry than most people I know, and has done a great job of progressing and understanding how important digital is, his insights on AI. He's one of the greats in our industry on a global scale.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%. In fact, he was the very first person I interviewed for the Resilient Recruiter podcast. So he helped launch the show. By the way, guys, I'll put a link in the show notes to the original episode where I interviewed Greg about the future of recruitment. So returning to Six Degrees then, Paul, we've talked about the, you know, transition from sort of 10 to 30 and the things that you implemented there. What about that next phase of where you really scaled? Because getting to 30 is a big achievement in itself. And I'd say, you know, only a minority of recruitment businesses ever get to that point. But you guys really have gotten to, for an independent, you know, recruitment business, you know, once you get over sort of 70, 80 employees, then that's, you're really at the, you must be one of the biggest independent recruiting firms in Australia at that stage. What were the keys to unleashing that kind of real scale?
Yeah, I think that it starts with the plan and understanding who we are, who we want to be, and where we want to go. And it's, you know, we weren't in for recruitment domination. You know, the logical thing, you know, we are still highly specialized in the disciplines and industry sectors we work. Of course, we've advanced those from when we set up 16 years ago, but we are not all things to all people. So we were very clear on who we wanted to be, how we were going to grow, and that was more around geographies. So, you know, we set up the Sydney business. You know, Sydney and New South Wales is the biggest state in this country, so that was the logical thing. And we were doing a lot of work in New South Wales from Victoria anyway. So we set up that business 3 or 4 years into opening Six Degrees. Really focused on growing New South Wales. And then obviously the logical thing was opening our Brisbane office, which we did about 3 or 4 years ago. So it was a geographical expansion, sticking true to our disciplines, you know, and looking at the growth areas, and especially the growth areas within the industry sectors. So education is enormous here. So we had a strategic our strategy was to grow in the education sector, healthcare, obviously with an aging population demographic, was an important one for us. As well as, you know, staying true to our original one, which is FMCG, which is still a big part of our business. And lucky it is, because during COVID-19, people still need to eat and comb their hair and wash their hair. So, it's been very lucky for us as well.
Absolutely. So,
sorry, and one other thing I will add to that, Mark, is making sure that we had the right people in the right roles. That's a really, really important one. And if we didn't have the right people in right roles, recruit the right people for the right roles.
Absolutely. So I'll return to the right people in the right roles in a second. But you mentioned that having the plan was really the key. Is that a physical, like that's a written document? What did the planning, the creating the strategic plan involve?
Yeah, so that involves getting the ELT together, executive leadership team, and working on a strategic plan. And that, you know, historically we did it 1 year out, but about 3 or 4 years ago, we hired an external strategy organization that helped us develop a 3-year plan. And, you know, initially they were talking 5 years. I think 5 years in this ever-changing world is pretty hard to predict. So we then used an external agency that helped us with our 3-year strategic plan of where to play and how to win.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So was this like an away weekend, or like how long did it take you to the leadership team to come up with the 3-year plan?
So the management consultancy gave us some pre-work to do. Mm-hmm. That was probably, and then we broke away into teams. And so there were probably 4 teams that spent 5 days on this. Then we had 2 days with the management consultancy, and then they went away and did a lot of work in helping us develop the strategic plan. Then then obviously refining that to what we wanted, and then obviously the rollout and the communication of that.
Got it. So
then that also divide that, you know, ties into our budgeting process that I spoke about. You know, if there's capital expenditure that's needed, you know, part of that, we go, you know, for us to really win, we needed a massive investment in technology. So that was part of the strategic plan 3 years ago. And hence, then that ties into the budgeting process. It ties into the organisational development and OD of the company. So it is a number of factors, but the strategic plan was the process, and then it ties into other parts of the business.
Fantastic. That makes a lot of sense. By the way, for our listeners, if you're interested in strategic planning in order to make your recruitment business grow, then I would invite you to check out recruitmentgrowthaccelerator.com. That's www.recruitmentgrowthaccelerator.com. This is a program I put together with my mentor, Romney Ross, And you can sign up for a free video interview I did with Romney about how he grew a startup from zero to £3 million in pre-tax profits within 4 years. Romney's been involved in mergers and acquisitions, you know, flotations, you know, startups, as well as having been a board director for a publicly quoted recruitment company here in the UK. So really interesting interview with a really interesting guy. If you're interested in that, go to the website, check it out. One of the topics we talk about is strategic planning. Paul, something you mentioned there was technology, and that when you did the strategic plan, one of the keys you identified was we need to make a major investment in technology. Could you talk a little bit about what specifically you did and how that has helped Six Degrees to be more successful?
Yeah, the recruitment platform we were using at the time was a thing called Profile. Profile didn't give us great information and data as far as candidates, clients, activity. It didn't marry to our general ledger or our invoicing system. It was quite an antiquated system. Our ATS and our CRM system didn't talk to one another. So we went through a very structured process to look at a new CRM. So we adapted a new CRM and then obviously ways of working. So historically we were sort of tied to our desk. We changed as far as the hardware, making sure that people can work anywhere, anytime. So that was the first thing we did was looking at the technology platform and the hardware that we were using. And then from there, it was looking at all HR or IT, HRIT systems that are available out there. I'll give you a really good example of one is XREF that we use for reference checking. Historically, we were in the old ways of thinking about how we did reference checks, which was you got to get the person, use it as a BD call. And we really challenged the old school way we thought about doing things to making sure we were much more efficient in the recruitment process, because we know things are changing. We know that the actual sourcing of candidates is getting easier and easier, and it's not long before it's done by a machine rather than having to be done by us. And so we invested in a person that really looked at our ways of working, looked at HR technology or all technology, and making sure that we are as efficient and effective as we possibly can be, and really advanced in that area.
What was the name of the tool you used for the reference checking?
XREF, letter X, yeah. REF,
okay.
and Australian publicly listed business that does a really good job of reference checking directly to the referees and a really efficient way of doing it.
Okay, that's a great example. You enable people to work from anywhere, which it must be paying dividends now that everyone, people are having to work from home and that sort of thing.
I will say, Mark, it's an interesting one. We're looking at ways of working and how people will return to work, and there is no question the next 6 months we are going to have to be really flexible. And people are saying, well, I want to work differently moving forward, and we've got to question ourselves of how we work and what we're going to do post COVID. I truly believe that people need to meet candidates face-to-face, and you can't really interview everyone over a computer screen because that's ultimately what clients pay us for. But sometimes that's not possible. We've got some people in this business that travel 90 minutes each way to and from work. Now, there's no need for those people to come into our physical office every day. But also recognizing that we do build a culture of inclusiveness and a culture of performance, and we want people here as well. So we are a little bit torn about what our flexibility policy is going to look like post-COVID, but there is no doubt we are going to be a lot more flexible than we have been historically. And I think we were doing a good job of that anyway.
It's interesting. Because I'd like to dig into this a little bit. That's maybe a good place to finish up. Everybody's going to have to re-examine how flexible they are. And you know, maybe that's one of the positive consequences of this pandemic is accelerating the pace of change. You know, probably where we thought the future of work, you know, we would be in 5 years, it's now more like 5 months away. What, because I've heard two arguments here. One is from the people who are sort of pro, you know, distributed workforces and working from home and being completely having a totally flexible model, saying, well, look, this just proves that it can be done. And then the sort of more traditional, you know, thinking, which is, well, that's all very well, but true relationships are built face to face. Number one. Number two, if everyone's working on their own, how do we maintain the culture? And number three, the gelling as a team, like if you're not spending physical time together, how does that work? And then not to mention the learning and development opportunities that are missed just from listening to your manager or your colleagues on the phone and hearing how they do things, or sitting in impromptu, sitting in on a meeting or what have you with a key client. How do you think you guys will find that compromise?
I think it's going to be test and learn. And, a little bit of it has to come down to performance. Performance does matter.
Yes.
But there is also cultural contribution. The part that I think that you hit on there that is of greatest concern to me is the learning and development piece. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned so much in my recruitment career by sitting around great recruiters, by having my managers or leaders at the time helping me through calls and talking about, you know, what if scenarios and how I could have done things better or what I did really well. So that learning and development piece is really, really important. And if you're working from home, I don't know whether you're going to grow and evolve as well. The other part is the sharing of information. You know, a job gets phoned in and you talk to your colleagues sitting at a pod, I've just got this job, and you know, names are thrown at you. That doesn't happen when you're sitting at home. Now, of course, there's chat rooms and all those things that you can do through technology. And maybe I am a little bit old school, but I have spoken to a lot of people, and I'm in the office right now, and there are a couple of people here, not many, but there are a lot of people that are yearning for that connection again. And don't ever discount that. That's why we come to work, and you know, people love working at 6 degrees because of the culture and environment and the buzz that we create. But I am also aware, and our CEO, Susie McInerney, my successor, is doing a really good job of educating some of us old school people that this is the way of the future, and we will work it out, and there a balance will be made, both from a learning and development, from a performance perspective, in the new ways of working.
Absolutely. Wow, that's awesome. So, Paul, I'll give people a couple of websites so that they can reach out to you and find out more about 6 Degrees, whether they want to, you know, use you as a sounding board, or whether they want to join your organization. So it's www.6degreesexecutive.com.au is the business website. And the charity that you mentioned earlier, beyondblue.org.au, I'll include that in the show notes as well. Could you just speak briefly, what do they do specifically?
Beyondblue.org.au are the largest organization around coping with depression and anxiety. As I talked about earlier, they're an organization that we've partnered with for a long time, help people that are suffering depression and anxiety to cope with it and to deal with it.
Excellent. Paul, this has been an amazing conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed meeting you. So thank you so much for your time today.
No problem, Mark. And if people do want to contact me also, obviously, through LinkedIn, I think you've asked for those details. And happy for you to share those. But I've really enjoyed our time.
Fantastic. Me too. Thank you, Paul. And
the one thing I will say also is 22 years in recruitment, it is very, very tough times at the moment, but tough times do pass. And having been through three tough recruitment cycles, the good part about tough recruitment cycles is when you do come out of them, you come out of them as a business that is not only stronger, but the accelerated curve as far as revenue, profit and personal learnings is always very, very good. So stay true, keep focused, work hard, and good times will come.
I couldn't have said it better. Thanks again, Paul, and I look forward to speaking again sometime in the future.
Thanks, Mark. Good talking to you.